I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. And once again, we do not have Marissa. But I'm really thrilled to have Randy Wolkin, the president and CEO of MACME, with us. Randy, welcome.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And we're going to talk about a book that you wrote, and a lot of people don't know that you're an author. But let's give people an update. So how's Marissa?
We just saw her, right? Which has been great. The little one in, and she seems to be doing wonderful and very happy. A little tired, as new moms are.
I bet, yeah.
So, but she's doing wonderful. Well, glad to have her back, but she's enjoying her time off.
And that's great, and she should make the most of it. But we do miss her.
We do.
My podcasts just aren't the same without Marissa.
Exactly. And you can't fill in for her.
We can't fill in for Marissa, so her seat is vacant. But we are really excited to have you here. So, Randy, you wrote a book, Present Future Leader. Tell us, why did you write a book?
Yeah, I've been wanting to write a book for many years, and this is the opportunity to do so. Just collect my thoughts on leadership and, mm-hmm. more importantly, how to lead in today's world, which I think is more and more the challenge for leaders at all levels of organizations, that today is very different than it was in the past. So I wanted to set the stage and write a book that focuses on how people really lead into the future and toward the future.
You mentioned that it's different than in the past. How's it different?
Well, the speed of change has never been quicker, and I don't think it's going to ever slow down. So in the past, you had a lot of time to think and a lot of time to act, and you might control, be a part of and or have significant dominance in a market for decades. Mm-hmm. That can happen and change overnight. So the reality is you have to lead at a different pace. You have to lead differently today. And I wanted to capture my learnings over the last 17 years here at MACME, what I've learned from members, what I've learned from leaders, and of course, what I've learned from leaders in the past.
So that's a great point. And let's talk a little bit. So there are some leaders that you wrote about.
I did.
How did you choose who you were going to write about? And like, what were some characteristics of those leaders that you decided to pull out?
Well, I wanted to talk about leaders that had influenced me. Okay. I also wanted to talk about leaders who really made a definitive difference in the lives of the people that they work with or their organizations. Usually they go hand in glove. And those individuals inspired me. As I thought about the leadership lessons I wanted to communicate to the reader, I thought, you know, these are individuals that mm-hmm. demonstrate what I have learned and what I'm trying to emulate in my own leadership style.
Very good. Great. So 17 years.
Yes.
Wow. That's gone by quickly.
It has.
Because I remember when you first came to MACME.
Yeah.
So how has MACME changed?
Yeah, we have the same purpose that has helped members thrive, but the way in which we do it has been transformed. And I think a good part of my desire to write this book is to say this is true of any organization I believe is thriving today. Is they're going through significant and meaningful change, even if the logo looks the same, even if some of the products are the same. Boy, are they changing! And I see a lot of our member companies also very quickly changing. So we do a lot more, as you know, David, in places and spaces that we weren't even in when mm-hmm. I first started 17 years ago. And that's going to keep happening. We're going to have to continue to change to thrive.
And as you were sharing that, Randy, I'm realizing that, you know, we have listeners in seven different countries and eight countries, 27 states. So maybe just give our listeners a synopsis of who is MACME, how long has it been around, and what is our core mission?
Yeah, so we've been around 105 years. And so it's it started with 13 members right here in the city of Syracuse, New York, and it has now grown to 26 counties within New York State. We're up to well over 330 members, about 100,000 employees amongst those members. And we also are leaders in the Manufacturers Alliance of New York State, which includes all counties in New York State and 2,600 companies and organizations. So that's been a change since I've been here. We haven't had that statewide role. And we do a lot more in the workforce space than we've ever done. We do advocacy, federal and state and local. And we do, as you know, lots of events. We do about 300 events in total a year, which we never did that many, in years past. Now we're doing more and more of those. So direct services to companies and HR hotline, the list goes on and on. And that's a part of adding value to the company so that they can be better and they can be successful.
In our press initiative, new.
Yeah, we have so many needs specifically when it comes to the workers of today and tomorrow. in our apprenticeship program, which has ramped up over 18 months, now has 100 enrolled apprentices, and that's going to continue to grow well over 100 now. And we're actually doing that with partners throughout the state now. We're pretty excited about these initiatives. As you know, Partners for Education Businesses joined us about a decade ago, and we're working with thousands of kids in high schools and middle schools now in order to get them ready and to tell them about great careers in manufacturing technology. So it's pretty exciting, actually. I think it can be really exciting today to run a company and to do things, even with a smaller staff. There are 20 of us now on team here. You know, how much you can get done.
Exactly.
With the right people doing the right things. You know, and we'll talk about some of the ways I think that we do it well here, and of course, what I've seen from others.
That's great. Thank you. Because as I was mentioning earlier, a lot of our listeners would have no idea what MACNE is.
Right.
But it really is exciting to see the reach that MACNE is throughout the state, you know, even with helping our members with their apprentice programs and getting those established with the state so that, you know, we're really doing like everybody else. We understand that there needs to be skilled trades.
It does.
And without it, manufacturing doesn't exist.
Yeah, and as you know, there can be a 5-10% opening right now.
Right.
So we have a company that's 1,800 people. It's 180 openings.
Wow.
So those kinds of things are throughout the manufacturing sector today. We just need people to understand that they are thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are having fantastic years, but they just don't have all the people they need to take on all the work that they have to do.
That's, you know, it's a great problem to have. unless like when I was the CEO of the company and I'm saying, oh my goodness, where am I going to get the people? But the reality is it is a great problem to have.
It is a good problem.
So tell us, Randy, how you structured the book. Because the book has a structure to it.
Right. I obviously wanted to start out by thanking the people who made it possible. And there were so many people that helped me do it. And then I really wanted to talk about, you know, why do we need to change?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it in our environment today? And I talk about Industry 4.0 and how it has changed the way people do work. And I think that's a big part of the need to change and focus, as the book's titled, Present Future. You need to be living in the present and focused on creating the future. And I compare that to the past present leaders. You know, and to be honest, I think I was one of those for a fair number of years as well. That is, you know, looking to the past to figure out what worked, keep doing what worked, maybe do some modifications, and that would be enough. I don't think that's enough anymore.
Okay.
And so I wanted to lay out why,
and
then I wanted to give, and I did this throughout the book, an opportunity to say, what is it you should take from each chapter, and what are some practical habits that you can immediately put into your life to begin the process of change, because change is actually instantaneous. It's maintaining change that has to take a lifetime, or at least for as long as you need that new habit or new opportunity. So I wanted to lay out each chapter to be actually on its own if need be,
sure,
as well as to lay it out so that an individual could use it. I also wanted to talk about, you know, at the individual level, and then what do organizations have to do? What do they need to do, and how does it have to look like for them to be successful? So I wanted to be able to talk to all levels of an organization and really walk them through a step-by-step approach to focus on creating the future.
So let's talk about that habit creation process, because you identified that at the beginning of the book. What do you mean by that? I thought habits were bad things that we fall into.
Well, they can be. The good news is they don't have to be. We can also adapt, adopt, and start new habit making. I've become convinced that to be a present future leader or to be focused on the future, you have to be really good at knowing how to create habits for yourself. I went on my own journey just a few years ago to create as many new and important habits for myself that I could, and that actually made that a routine part of my life. Now I literally pick up a new habit per week. And now it doesn't have to be a dramatic. It could be taking your vitamin in the morning. It could be laying out the top three priorities you're going to have for tomorrow, today.
Okay.
Which is a habit that I find incredibly useful given the busyness that the day can become. That way you can focus to make sure.
Sure.
Get these three critical things done. But I wanted to lay out that I think real change is habit change, in part because habits are things we do and we don't even think about them. Or if we're thinking about them, they're automatic. We're not debating whether or not we're going to do them anymore. We just do them. I started on this journey, and I've shared this with you, when I decided that I wanted to tackle something in my own life for my own health, and I wanted to lose weight. And by using a whole series of intricate habits around that, I was able to lose over 20 pounds. And I thought to myself, this is how I have to continue to change my life. So that became a part of my learning too, as well, is that habits can create real positive, healthy things. And then organizations that create habits for individuals and the team itself will be successful.
So what I love about that is that rather than just letting bad habits take over our life, we can become intentional, highly intentional about creating the habits, positive habits that move us in the direction that we're looking to go.
Absolutely.
I'm reminded of a podcast that I just listened to not long ago where Michael Hyatt talked about building in rituals, same type of thing, habit same rituals, thing. Whatever it is, during the day so that we can actually accomplish so much more because it happens without us thinking.
We do it.
It just occurs.
In fact, we often will miss them if we're not doing them. I mean, exactly. I find myself now that I've created habit routines, it's like, oh, I didn't do that. I have to do that. And I'm not going to bed until I do it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really a fascinating phenomenon once you get focused on habit creation. It's also true in the workplace. If you create like we have a weekly staffing, it's a habit.
Right.
We have it every week. People both look forward to it and count on it.
Right.
To build structure into their lives, make sure we're talking to everybody on team.
That's great. That's awesome. At the beginning of the book, you say that present future leaders will need to change the way they lead in meaningful ways. What do you mean by meaningful?
Well, first of all, I think there's the meaningful means that it will matter.
Okay.
You can't just make change for change purposes. So it should have depth to it. It should matter to your team. So change for change purposes is not necessarily mm-hmm. good. But change in ways that add more value, that make people's lives better, that in our case help us serve our members better, that's meaningful. And so sometimes I think people can get caught in, oh, I have to change. Well, if it's not useful or meaningful,
right.
then don't change just for change purposes. But please do change, because I think what we're seeing throughout our economy and throughout organizations and even people's lives, if they're not changing, they're not growing, and they're not adding more value. And I think that's the number one thing that companies have to do, add more value daily. That requires meaningful change, not just a little bit here, a little bit there, sometimes quite dramatic.
Okay, sometimes drastic change.
Yeah.
Well, and the reality is that in the world we're living in, if they don't change, they may die.
Yeah, as an organization, that they may not exist. In fact, in a very short period of time, I think it's another thing we've seen in our economy, you can have entire industries be uprooted very quickly.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure the taxi industry never really saw what we're coming.
Exactly.
You know, and same thing, you know, two guys with an air mattress in San Francisco disrupted the hotel business with Airbnb.
Right.
And that happened very quickly. And with software today, especially, you really have to get out in front of it. You have to be focused on creating the future before someone else takes your business.
That's great. And I got to be careful I don't lead you down a whole path of innovation because we won't talk enough about the book. So, and which is what I want to do. You also noted in the book that that we have to, present future leaders have to make this transition, but while honoring the past. What do you mean by that? Like, how do we hold on to the past or honor the past, but yet have this transformational change in our organization?
You know, it's in our organization, every year we honor, I'm talking to one, David, you're a Wall of Fame winner. We honor people who've led us in the past because they do teach us about hard work. They teach us about success. They show us that this is never easy. So we shouldn't in no way not be honoring the achievements and the outcomes and those people that have given us the path that we're on. We, as it's been said, we stand on the shoulders of giants. So let's not forget the lessons we have in the past, but also let's honor their spirit by doing more.
Okay.
Because they always, that's how they got where they did.
Sure.
They did more. They didn't just accept what was happening. They did more. So I think we do have to honor the past, what we've learned, build on it, but it's not going to be good enough. It won't be good enough to be successful. And that's probably been true for a very long time. But today, the speed in which we have to do things, I think, has changed. And that's one of the things I keep talking about in the book, how quickly we have to continue to do what we do in order to be successful.
You also mention in the book that the leaders have to be continually developing. What do you mean by that? You're talking about continually learning, continually developing. What do you mean, and how do they do that?
Well, I think they have to, you know, they have to try to be as specific as you can. What is it that I need to learn? And continue to investigate what it is that's either holding you back or the things you want to learn. And you know, and I always tell people, if you try to find things that you're excited about, passionate about, and you're good at, it's a lot easier.
Sure.
You know, so do those things. At least start with those things. We tend to be really good at things we really like. So mm-hmm. go do those things. So yes, you always have to be growing. You always have to be learning. And that requires, I think, in many ways, intentional change and structured change. And that's why I talk about ways to both identify a habit. And then I'm a big believer in scorecards. You have to keep score.
Right.
You have to take track. I mean, I keep track of the habits I do on a daily basis. I check them off. I've got an app. I just check them off to make sure I've done them today. And it keeps me on pace to do them. And even, you know, in those kinds of things make a big difference in our change model. But we have to have a way to change. The other thing is to be pay close attention to how we learn.
Okay.
We all learn differently. Mm-hmm. So go do it the way you want to do it. Maybe, I know you've talked about audiobooks. You love audiobooks.
Right.
You know, I tend to read mm-hmm. more of the books I read. I like, so the written word is something that I've honored for a long time. Others will learn differently. Find your learning style, which I also talk about in the book.
So let's talk a little bit specifically more about you. So you came to MacNey. Mm-hmm. You're a West Point grad. Mm-hmm. And thank you for your service, because without people like you, we wouldn't have the freedoms that we have. You know, I'm looking over your shoulder, and there's a picture from 9/11 as the firemen are raising the flag.
I remembered that.
Yeah, it was, and we're just just commemorating that just this past week. Yeah. But how does Randy stay continually learning? Like, you talk about books, but is there a way that you choose a book? Or, I know that you use Blinkist as well. So tell us, how do you stay on the cutting edge?
Yeah, so I always have multiple books that I'm reading at any one time. I like digital downloads. They're quick. I mean, okay. I'm totally overwhelmed by the kind of digital downloads we can get. That's one of the things that shocked and surprised me about my ability to do this book quickly, was mm-hmm. getting it on Amazon and allowing people to see it. More recently, I had an old high school, my freshman basketball high school coach found my book online,
wow.
sent me an email, and said the next book should be about how I learned leadership lessons from my freshman basketball coach. He said, that's the next title for my book. And but it's funny, because I think those are the kinds of things that I get into. So I love apps that mm-hmm. do short takeaways from either books and or just, things that people are writing about. Okay. So it doesn't have to be an entire book for me. It's mm-hmm. Parsons a book. I love to learn from multiple sources. And I really, it's one of my habits to try to learn something new and or to read something different every day.
Okay.
So that I'm always learning. And you never know when you're going to get to a piece
right.
that you really need. So you have to also allow chance, fate, be blessed by these opportunities.
Sure.
And not be overly prescribed, in my opinion.
Right.
And I think you can learn from everybody you run into. Yeah, I think it's really important to learn, as we observe others, what they do well, and of course the things that maybe we would do differently.
Sure.
So I think there's lots of ways to learn, and I try to use as many of them as I can.
That's great. And you talked about habits, and I kind of refer to it perhaps as rituals, mm-hmm. but one of mine is that my reflection time, I tried to do it in the evening and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, because I'm too tired. Mm-hmm. And I found that I wasn't doing it as much as I wanted to. And even saying, okay, I'm not going to go to bed till I do this, it just wasn't working. So mine is better in the morning.
Yes.
So I reflect on the previous day. And one of the questions I ask myself is, what did I learn?
Right. It's a great question.
And that way, it focuses every day for me when I start my day. Okay, yesterday, a lot of experiences. What did I learn from that? Some days, it's not a whole lot. Other days, whoa, this is, and in my note app that I use in Evernote, there's, chapters, and not chapters, but paragraphs sometimes of things that I wanted to capture for that day. So that's great, that every day continually learning. And I loved how you said too, basically I'm paraphrasing now, everybody can teach us something.
Oh, they can.
If we're willing to learn.
Yeah.
And we got to be looking for that. You talk about the dreaded M word, millennials, in your book. And you talk about millennials a lot, but not the way I'm hearing a lot of people talk about millennials. So what's your view about millennials?
Yeah, so one of the subtitles of the chapters is millennials are the solution.
Mm.
I mean, I'm more and more convinced that, and I have daughters who are all millennials, and I learn from them all the time, is that we have to learn from millennials. They are the dominant culture now becoming.
Right.
And this, within years, they'll have the majority of the workplace will actually be occupied by millennials and Gen Xers and boomers. As I'm the last year of boomers. We're all heading out the door.
Yep.
in the next 15 to 20 years. So they actually, it's their culture that we need to learn and we need to adapt to and we need to focus on. And they bring a lot of the solutions to the table. They are quick learners. They are technology driven. You know, if I want my phone to be fixed and work right, I'll hand it to one of my daughters. In 2 seconds, I'll know what I should be doing.
Right.
We see it in our own office with our own millennial employees. And I love the intergenerational dialogue that's already occurring.
Okay.
But I think more and more, and when I tell Gen Xers especially, because they're going to be in the workforce longer than I will, get yourself a millennial coach.
Exactly.
And let's be honest, they're the ones who will have to teach us. So that mentoring piece has to go back and forth, but I'm very high on millennials. And I think it first dawned on me as I heard all this language about millennials and in some of the things that were being said about them that weren't very nice was, these are my kids.
Right.
My kids are millennials.
Right.
So why are we afraid of millennials?
Yeah.
You know, we've taught them to want more. Mm-hmm. We've given them a value system that goes beyond work. It's a holistic approach, which I think companies have to have today in order to be successful with not just millennials, but all elements of the workforce. More and more of boomers and Gen Xers want what millennials are bringing to the table. They too want greater balance. And I don't mean, work gets cut off at 5. Well, millennials don't mind working later in the evening at times. Mm-hmm. You know, they're 24/7 sometimes.
Right.
And so I think work has to change, and millennials are going to help lead us and guide us. And that can be a lot of fun. And so I do think that millennials are the solution, not the problem.
That's great. You know, you talk about in chapter 17, you talk about fun. Why is fun so important? I mean, isn't work supposed to be work?
You know, that's the way I grew up, and I remember those words exactly.
Right.
I remember my father telling me when I was doing a chore, like, it's not supposed to be fun, it's work.
Yep.
I think I entered at least some of the stuff that I did with that mentality at first. But, you know, the more I do the things that I do, I totally believe that we have to make work not only meaningful, it has to be meaningful. It can't just be fun for fun's sake in terms of work. I mean, you can have fun, and you should have fun off work time. But you also have to have fun at work. You have to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And enjoy is maybe a better word, but you're having fun. I mean, David, you're in our meetings, and we have some, you know, we get the work done, but we're not afraid to laugh. We're not afraid to be present to each other. More and more workplaces have to be like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and not just the millennials. Everybody wants to enjoy coming to work.
Right.
And they want to go home at night and have enjoyed the day. And that will be a defining factor, I think, of many successful organizations. We have to do meaningful, purposeful work.
Right.
That's what we get paid to do. At the same time, you know, if we're walking around with scowls on our faces, that's not exciting. It's hard to recruit people into those places.
You can feel it when you go in.
You do. And that the culture is maybe an overused word, but it really is the word that we need to focus on in our organizations. And you better be having fun. And you need to ask people, are you still having fun? Are you enjoying what you're doing? Not that it's not hard, but that you get something out of it. And enjoyment means both of those things. Having some fun, getting the work done.
Exactly. And, you know, when you were talking about that, I was thinking back of, so last Friday evening, you know, the whole staff and our spouses, we went out for a dinner cruise on a beautiful lake. And there was so much laughter going on on the boat, those of us. And I had shared with my wife that, you know, we started laughing in the afternoon even before we closed the offices. It was a wonderful time. Now, did we get work done? Yes. Did we close early on last Friday? Yeah. But, you know, our members may not see the late nights that our staff is here working on events and things. When you do, you know, 300 events or something a year, you got a lot of evenings in there as well.
You do have a lot of evenings. And we try to make those events fun, right?
We do.
Because we want people to enjoy themselves.
Right.
You know, and learning and enjoyment, I think, more and more go hand in hand. I think, you know, I went to school at a time where sometimes it might have felt like drudgery.
Sure.
People don't want that. I don't know if they've ever wanted it, but they certainly don't want it now.
Right.
And I think having fun while you're doing your meaningful work is absolutely critical.
And I think I agree with you 100%. And I think that the millennials are reminding us that it isn't a job, and it's someday when we're 67 and we can retire, we'll have a life. We need to have this life. It needs to be holistic, like you mentioned earlier.
Have it now.
Chapter 9, you talk about move quickly, but keep moving. And as I looked at that title and I looked at the chapter, I thought of the quote from John Wooden. He said, be quick, but don't hurry.
Yeah, the reason why I used to keep moving is I think there are times you do need to slow down, but not stop. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think that's what gets you in trouble. So you totally stop or you just go back Oftentimes we can't go back. We have to continue to go forward. But and you have to vary your pace.
Okay.
But you do have to keep moving. You have to move to the future. You can't stop and stay where you're at. And so that's got to be a part of our mantra. It is here. What we do is good today.
Yeah.
But we got to do more tomorrow in terms of how we do the event, and how we do our outreach to members and how we help members. There's always more to do, and that requires moving quickly as we can without, like you said, hurrying and missing the point of doing it.
Sure. And actually, as I looked at my notes, I misquoted Coach Wood, and he said, be quick, but don't rush.
Yeah.
Which is even different than hurrying. You talk a lot in a lot of spots in the book about vision. Where does a leader get their vision from?
Yeah, so if you're going to head to the future, you got to have a sense of what it should mm-hmm. be like. And I think that's a big part of why I use the hyphen there, present future. You have to live in the present, but you have to have a sense of where you're going. You have to know at least in some way what the future looks like. And I think today especially, you can see the future. I like to say that the future exists. It's just not widely distributed.
Okay,
so you can
I like that.
See the future yep. today. I mean, I've been in plants and facilities in our very own community, and you mm-hmm. can see the automation that's going to be everywhere. You can see the types of skill sets that are going to be needed.
Yep.
So I don't, when I say the future, I'm not necessarily saying you need to know what's going to happen 20 years from now, but you do need to know what direction we're heading.
Okay.
You need to have a vision for that. And that has to be over-communicated over and over and over again. We talk about here at MACNI and mm-hmm. I hear it in our member companies, like, where are we going? And
right.
what's the future look like? And though it may have some resemblance to the present mm-hmm. or even the past, it's going to look different. It's going to be different. I mean, even in your time here, you've seen how far training has come.
Yeah.
How far events have grown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you got to have a vision, and that has to be communicated, and it has to be shared. It has to be a shared vision, and the people have to do it together.
Yeah.
You know, where are we going, and what's it look like, and let's talk about that. And I've always felt that that vision, the future, then can pull you from the past.
Very good.
We want to be. Let's go there. That's exciting. That's passion.
Yep.
That looks like a lot of fun. Let's go do that. Not going to be necessarily easy to get there,
mm-hmm.
but at least it's compelling. And, I also think that though fear can be helpful,
yep.
it's not the primary driver of what gets people to do things. You know, they care about somebody or something.
Sure.
That their why has got to be beyond just saving my job or just getting today's work done. It's got to be something bigger.
Sure. You've mentioned a few times now, I've heard you talk about passion and that we need to be passionate. How do we cultivate passion?
Yeah, I think passion and fun and purpose all go together. When we care about something, we can be very
yeah.
passionate about. When we think about maybe it's our children or our spouse,
mm-hmm.
Or people we care deeply about or a community, get passionate about
sure.
it. The work can be the same way. In fact, I look for passion at work. You know, things that I can get excited about and things that other people are excited about and spend some time there.
Right.
But passion really means you're deeply engaged and
yep.
I think you're ready to try to be good at it.
Yeah.
You can almost feel the air go out of the room when there's no passion for what's
right.
being talked about.
Right.
You know, it's kind of drudgery. It feels like drudgery. Less and less of those conversations I want to have.
You can tell when that momentum is lost. And you can have an organization that's got a lot of momentum, even a meeting that's got a lot of momentum, and the wrong thing is said, and the momentum is lost. And you can feel the lack of passion.
Yeah.
And we did a podcast, Marissa and I did a podcast a couple months ago, where we talked about, you can cultivate passion. Passion is curiosity.
Yes.
Multiplied by engagement, time
right.
with it.
Yes, yes.
Results in passion. You can be passionate about anything if you just have a curiosity and interest in that.
Yeah, it is really, you're right, Dave, it's about engagement. Engaging in it.
Exactly.
And going deep in it and have, and I think getting yourself excited and
yeah.
and letting the excitement feed off of others.
Sure.
If you want to really work on something and really get it done, get passionate about it.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it's just too hard to do.
It's not work if you're passionate about it. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't mind staying those extra minutes
right.
or doing those extra tasks because it means something.
Sure.
And you get excited about it. You can, even our own conversation, we can tell when we're getting excited about something.
Right.
And you can see that in the people you work with and the people you care about.
That's awesome. The last part of your book, you talk about volunteering. Why should a leader volunteer? I mean, they're working, 50, 60 hours a week or more. Why volunteer?
Well, I think we got to always give back. And I think and the best leaders I've ever known have always given back to the community or to their country or to others. It's somebody they're given to. And I think the best leaders are always beyond themselves, always right. giving to somebody else in whatever way best meets, you know, who they are and what their circumstances.
Yeah.
So I'm absolutely convinced, and we do it here, and I try to do it in my own life, and I do it in my own life. I know you do. We need to continue to go beyond ourselves.
Right.
And volunteering is a great way to practice leadership, especially mm-hmm. if you're younger in your career.
Sure.
Maybe you're not going to be allowed it early on to run the company or run yeah. your team, but you can be a leader in another space, and that's how you learn those things.
I mean, right.
when groups get together and they go help people in need, bonding happens. We recently, as you know, went to where I worked for a while, the Samaritan Center.
Yep.
You know, and it's just so moving to be there and to serve somebody else.
Right.
You know, hot and sweaty, and yep. that's just fine.
Yeah.
Because you're smiling, somebody else gets a value out of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think volunteering is a part of being a holistic leader. And I think in companies today, I think that are involved in the volunteer space, involved in going beyond profit making.
Right.
I know statistically they do better.
They do.
And so this is not sort of a neutral thing. Well, we can do it or don't do it. If you want your company to thrive, involve them in volunteering to help somebody else.
Exactly.
And that will help your company do better. And I know you're a big subscriber to that.
Yeah, it is, and I loved how you talked about maybe you're not old enough to have that leadership position in your corporation yet or your company, but the greatest proving ground for leadership and where true leadership is going to shine is in a volunteer organization where people don't have to be there. If you can lead that team, you're going to hone your leadership skills real quick,
yep.
and your company will recognize it.
And when you think about it, everyone who shows up for work day in your current company, they're volunteering. I mean, yeah, they're getting paid, but
right.
they showed up today.
Right.
And, you know, and so, and we all know the best projects, the best outcomes come from people who are all in.
Exactly.
And I think that's what you got to get good at. In a lot of places that I know I practiced before I was given, you know, a top leadership role was in other places and mm-hmm. spaces.
Sure.
Boards of nonprofits, just outright volunteering at yep. nonprofits. You know, it's a sector that I wasn't fully aware of until I went and worked in there for 3.5 years. But I've really never stopped wanting to be a part of that sector because so much passion, so right. much goodness comes out of it. And now, I even talk about in my book, I'm working with people overseas, like a good mm-hmm. friend of mine is in the Congo. So you can do these things now, you know, in electronic and digital ways.
Exactly.
You couldn't even do, 5 or 10 years yeah. ago. So there's more ways than ever to help somebody else. But I think also but volunteering is a part of that. And I think it can really change who you are as a leader.
Absolutely. So give me one word that describes your book.
I like the word thrive.
Oh, I love it. Thrive.
Yeah, I think you want to thrive. And my book's all about leadership and making sure that people can be positioned. I wanted people to have a roadmap, mm-hmm. at least a way to think about thriving.
Awesome.
Because I think today the change amongst us can cause people to be fearful.
Yeah.
And there is a path forward.
Sure.
We don't have to live in fear that we're going to lose our job or that tomorrow's corporation will be so different we can't thrive. I think we can thrive. We have to learn from others.
Yep.
We have to learn from the youngest generations.
Mm-hmm.
But we can thrive, and we do so, by really building those life-giving habits and then moving as quickly as we can to the future.
Awesome. And I think there's never been an opportunity in history for people to thrive that's better than right now.
And you can see it. There's a lot of global advances. Not that there isn't tragedy and difficulty mm-hmm. and still poverty and hurt throughout the globe, but if you look at the benchmarks, the world is moving much more quickly to the future, and their incomes are rising,
yep.
and there's real opportunity. So that's all positive, but it's still going to take a lot of hard work on all of our parts.
Sure.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of things to be positive about the future. And quite frankly, it's easier to work in a world where you can still look to the future. So we can make a difference.
Exactly. So where does somebody get Present Future Leader?
So if you want an individual copy, it's on Amazon. You can find the Present Future Leader on Amazon, download both digital and get yourself a copy sent to you. I guess if you're a Prime member in 2 days.
You can.
But we also have bulk copies here at MacNe.
Great.
Which we can also secure for you, both hardcover and softcover. So it's been a great journey, and it is available. And again, one day I went from having never written a book to the next day to have written one. So I would encourage people out there to consider writing.
Right.
Maybe it's a blog post.
Yes.
To start with. You and I do that, yep. Right? A blog post on a weekly basis to kind of to do it. But it's never been a better time to write and never been a better time to share your thoughts about leadership or your thoughts about the stuff that you care, you're passionate about. And I know it's energized me to do that. So I would encourage those who are listening to think about writing and sharing as a part of their own learning and growth. And it's been a great journey for me so far.
And if people want even more information, they go to macny.org.
Exactly.
macny.org.
It's a great way to, you can right actually there. Find it on that, right on the website there. You can, order it right through Amazon there. Or again, get a hold of us if you want bulk copies.
Sure. Great. Well, thank you, Randy. It's been a pleasure talking with you about the book. And
thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
Again, we're not filling in for Marissa. The chair is still empty, but we're just waiting for her to get back. But thank you so much. So with that,
thank you.
I'm Dave Freund, and this was The Next Page.